Good evening, everyone. I'm Dawn Ireland, president of CDH International, and this is the CDH Radio Show. This week, our wonderful support division leader, Tracy Meets, is interviewing a family from Texas. Heather is going to share the story of her CDH survivor, Robert.
Today I'm here with Heather. Heather, would you like to introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about when CDH popped into your life?
I'm Heather Kerbo. CDH popped into our life at my 30-week growth scan after going into preterm labor multiple times and they couldn't find out why. The ultrasound tech saw something next to Robert's heart and they referred us to MFM. And before I could ever get in, I went into preterm labor again. And I let the hospital know that we were waiting on an MFM appointment for a level 2 ultrasound. And they decided to do it while I was there and inpatient. And they discovered that he did in fact have CDH.
You didn't have any symptoms prior to that in the pregnancy or anything that was...
I mean, other than I have severe gastroparesis, and so my pregnancy other than that was completely until I started going into preterm labor as early as 29 weeks.
So the hospital kept you then after they did the ultrasound?
No, they did not. And that's what irritated Dad and I. Is because we would go into these preterm labor scares. They would hold us for 24 hours. I wouldn't progress. And they were like, okay, you're good to go back. And I'm like, you do realize I am a teacher, right? I'm up on my feet all day. And I was like, I'm not just a teacher. I'm a fine arts teacher. And I was like, so that means I'm the one that gets pulled to do anything. They need duty covered. Oh, let's pull the fine arts teacher. Oh, the teacher's out sick. Let's pull the fine arts teacher. And so I was all over that campus. And they were like, no, you're good to go be on your feet. And when I finally saw MFM, I asked him, I said, am I truly okay to be at work? And he said, what do you do? I said, I'm a teacher. And he said, absolutely not. He said, your cervix is already terribly short. And he said, no. He said, if you were sitting down at a desk all day, he said, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But he goes, I know in reality that as a teacher, he goes, you're not able. Because they were allowing me to sit and teach because they were concerned with the preterm, mm-hmm. just being pregnant, they were concerned. And they were like, we'll let you sit. But I mean.
What did they tell you about your case with Robert?
Because of my gastroparesis, I couldn't have an MRI. I have a gastric pacemaker and that sits right. It actually, Robert liked to play with it and kick it. Yeah. And when I was pregnant with him, and I can't be around any type of magnets. And they even called my GI and was like, you know, she's pregnant with this baby. This baby has this defect. We need to see what all is up. We need so that we can appropriately. And my GI very frankly told them, if you want to hurt her and the baby, you put her in an MRI machine. Because he said some pacemakers, you can have MRIs as long as it's not a high powered. And he was like, this type of device that she has, you do not. He goes, it can harm her and or Robert. And so we went in this, I mean, we knew he had it, but we had no idea what was up. We had no idea how truly severe. And everybody kept telling me because I had been diagnosed so late that it was hopeful that it was a very small defect. And in reality, it was not. I mean, the only thing that ended up not being up was his liver.
So what happened? When did he arrive?
I saw MFM on a Monday. I was taken out of work. We moved Saturday And I did absolutely nothing. I sat and directed traffic. And I felt really bad that afternoon. And I told my husband, I said, I'm going to go lay down. I was like, I haven't done anything, but I was like, I just don't feel, I was like, I feel awful. And in the middle of the night, I started going into preterm labor again.
How far along were you?
35 weeks.
35 weeks.
And I woke my husband up the next morning about 7. And I said, we need to go. I said, this has been going on since 3 a.m. And I said, it's not, I said, I've tried everything they've told me to try to get it to stop. And I said, we know Robert has this. And I said, out here in Uvalde, our hospital is not, it has no NICU. It has no, like, even now, if there's issues with him, they can't handle him. Mm-hmm. They know absolutely nothing. And so we went, and there was question of, did my water break? Because I had a positive bedside and the test they do. And they were like, okay, this is the fourth time. We're not stopping at this time. You're driving an hour and a half. Y'all are asking for it. You're staying. And my induction was 3.5 weeks away. And they said, you're staying until he decides, until you fully progress, or you make induction day. And the next morning, my MFM came by and he said, I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to make induction day. He said, there's no way. He said, I can't tell you. I said, well, when? Because I said, my husband can't sit over here just waiting. I was like, we have to have, I was like, you've already taken me out of work. And I said, I've been out of work because of all these scares. I said, so one of us, he has to go back. And he goes, send him back. He goes, and we'll just, you know, and he looked at my husband and said, just keep your phone on you. The next night, Tuesday night. So I was 35 and 2 days. But they called it 3 because he came at 12:08 Wednesday morning. I ate dinner Tuesday night and I started feeling real bad again. I called the nurse and I said, I don't. And she called the OBGYN on call and he checked and he's like, you are not in labor. This is a gastroparesis flare. And I'm looking at him like, I've dealt with numerous gastroparesis flares in my life. This is not. And I was like, okay, whatever. And so they put me on, they hooked me back up for fluid, IV fluids, and gave me Tylenol, and I started profusely vomiting, just nonstop. And like, I just kept, but nothing was picking up on the monitor, according to them. I couldn't see it. It was behind me. 2.5 hours later, I stood up to go to the bathroom and I felt him drop.
Wow.
And I sat back down and I called the nurse and she came in and she was like, he's in an emergency C-section right now. Don't move. Like, just don't. And I was like, I have to go to the bathroom. And she's like, you better use the bed. And she said, we'll just clean you up. She said, we are not having a toilet baby tonight, let alone a toilet CDH baby. She was like, no, we're not doing it. The OBGYN finally came in and he checked him in. He goes, I have never seen a first time mom go this quick. And he goes, I'm going to go tell everybody and let them know that Robert's coming. And he goes, if your water breaks before I get back, call. He no more hit the door. And surprise, aww, my water broke. And it was meconium stained. So they knew Robert was definitely in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That there was. So, and I had texted my husband earlier when I had started feeling that. And the weather was horrible between Uvalde and San Antonio. He started out and he texted me and he said, babe, I have to turn around. He said, I can't see. The road between here and San Antonio is not well lit at night. I mean, there's little small towns in between, but otherwise it's complete jet black. You can't. And I told him, I said, Robert and I need you alive versus trying to get over here. And I was like, they tell me I'm not, that I just don't feel good. I texted him, and it was 11:30, and I said, your son is coming. And then 40 minutes later, I sent pictures, and I said, congratulations, Dad. And he woke up. He fell asleep because he had to go to work the next day. And he's like, what is this? He goes, you were just throwing up. What is this? What do you mean, my son? What?
Oh.
He was not exactly thrilled.
No, I bet not.
That he missed Robert being. And Robert spontaneously, they had warned me that he probably wouldn't cry and that they didn't want him to. He definitely let his presence be known and his opinion be known. And
was it hard to get him stabilized when they took him?
Not initially. And you know, pediatric surgery saw him and said, you know, we of course have to wait until the pulmonary hypertension settles down a little bit. And because he was a 35-weeker, they were like, we want to give him a little bit of time to kind of adjust to being, because he actually was growth restricted. So they said he was about the size of a 32 or 33-weeker. And they're like, we want to give him a little bit of time just to adjust. And I have high-functioning autism, and I was so tired. It did not sink in on me how bad he was. And I was telling everybody that he was doing, you know, for everything, he was doing really well. My husband got there the next morning and was like, and then the following day we went and saw him and he was doing better, but it hit me and I lost it. And my husband's looking at me and he's like, what in the, he was better than he was. Yes. Why are you? And he's like, oh, wait a minute. He goes, it's just now said everything's hitting her that, you know, he's here and they managed to, by day 7, they were really impressed with how well he was doing. They were able to get him off the oscillator and on a traditional vent, which was the goal. They were like, we don't want to repair him while he's still on the oscillator. We wanted him on a traditional vent. We want him off nitric and off all blood pressure medicine before we go in for repair. They were surprised that that happened by day 7. And they were like, okay, this kid is really, and so they took him for a repair and he did beautiful. It was 5 days later that the day they were planning on extubating him, that he took a huge turn. Dad went back. Dad spent surgery day all through the weekend with me over there with us. I came back with Dad and I was like, you know what? I'll just start driving back and forth every day. I said, I'm still on maternity leave. I can't go back. I have stitches. I can't go back to work like this yet. I'm not cleared. And I was like, I can drive the hour and a half and spend a few hours with him and then come back. I'll be fine. I got there and everybody was standing around Robert. And I was like, the medical fellow that was following him, she said, I wondered when you were going to get here. She said, I know how you are and I know how you freak out. And she's like, we didn't want to call you while you were on the road. And she said, we have no idea what's going on with this kid. She said, I planned to trial extubation today to non-invasive ventilation through CPAP just to see, because she said he's done amazing. And she said now, like, he was sitting in the 80s and they were trying to figure out, and they had to escalate him back to the oscillator. The oscillator was not recovering him and they were throwing everything at him that they could. he had pulmonary hemorrhaged. And being a grade one IVH brain bleed baby, they called for ECMO consult and PICU would not. They said the window to get him up here and on the oscillator and on ECMO is very tiny, is a very small window. And they were like, with the brain bleeds, they said, we don't think the risk is worth it. And I had asked the medical fellow, the two things I had asked when Robert was first born was that if they thought he wasn't going to make it, to let grandma and grandpa come see him. Because with COVID, they were only allowing mom and dad at bedside. And they had just changed the rules to where it could be mom and dad together. And they said, you know, in critical life-ending circumstances, they, of course, would make adjustments. And then that they would let me hold him. I called dad and numerous times throughout the day. And I said, you know, you need to come over here. Robert is not doing well. And dad was like, no, come home. Let's rest. You rest. We'll go back in the morning. And I'm like, no, I'm telling you, they're telling us our son may not make it the next hour. And he just wasn't getting it. And I actually hung up on him and just finally about four, the medical fellow said, and she came and she said, I want you to know. And she said, we're not giving up, but she said, I want to honor my word and that you can get grandma and grandpa here. Because she said, I know it's going to take them some time to get here. And she said, I would rather them be here when something, if something happens, then to wait till we're like, okay, there's nothing else we can do, and then get them. So I called my mother-in-law and I said, they're letting you and dad in. I said, can you please get Paul? I said, I've tried all day. I said, I can't communicate to him what's going on. I said, he doesn't get it. And she was like, okay. 5 minutes later, Paul calls me and he goes, what do you mean they're letting mom and dad in? Why didn't you? And I said, look, I said, I have been telling you since I got here at 10:30 this morning that something is wrong with our son. And he's like, how bad is it? And like, I looked at the monitor and I said, his oxygen level is sitting in the 60s. And I said, he's on max support. And I said, it's not. And I said, I'm sitting over here by myself. I mean, the medical fellow, this was her first CDH baby, and that's why they let her. And I mean, she got extremely attached to Robert. And she just kept, all she kept saying and hugging me was, he's an amazing little guy, mom. And she's like, I don't understand what's going on. They managed to call in pulmonology, and pulmonology, they trialed a drug called Flolan, and he was like, let's try this. This is the last, he's like, this is, since he's not an ECMO candidate, this is what we're going to have to try. They said fully sedated and paralyzed him and started on the Flolan. And as he reached the maximum therapeutic dose, he started to come around. It took 3 weeks of him just completely out of it and drugged fully before he was, and then finally they were able to start weaning. And I want to say a couple of days after he turned a month old, they got him off the oscillator and got him on a traditional vent. And they were like, let's leave him a day, see how he does. And then they said, if he does well, we'll let you hold him. So 34 days before I could hold, and it took PT, it took the nurses, and it took RT to hand him to me. And then the next day, they surprised me when I came in. I heard a baby crying, and I was like, that sounds like back there by... Robert. And I was like, but there's no other, there was only one other baby on the other side of him. And I had heard him cry before. And I was like, that's not that baby. Oh. And I walked around the corner and his RT was standing there. And he goes, if we had known you were coming this soon, he said, we would have waited. And he goes, look who's extubated.
Oh, precious sounds.
Oh my goodness. And RT was like, are you going to? And I was like, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't. Oh. What do you want me to say? Like,
so did you get to pick him up right then and there?
Or? No, they wanted to let him kind of chill and not be super agitated that day, just to kind of to see how he, because he was extremely tap-nit-nick. And so they were, his neonatologist was amazing, but she was real cautious and real, because the hospital that he ended up being at, because we were so newly, I mean, we had very little time, is not the best. I mean, they did amazing with Robert, but they're not a CDH hospital by any means. And so this was, they had handled CDH babies before, but not a CDH preemie. And so they were truly trying. And I know they reached out a lot to Dr. Harding at Houston for guidance, just because they were like, you know, this baby is too unstable to even consider trying to transfer right now. Like, what can we do to get this, you know? And then if mom wants to decide to transfer, we will talk about that when he's not so unstable. He was extubated for 2 weeks and struggled so hard with reflux. Oh my goodness, this kid, every time you picked him up, he vomited. PT worked with him, he threw up. RT would come to give him his breathing treatments, he would throw up. And little did we know, he was aspirating on it. He didn't show any of the true, like, clinical. And one night, 2 weeks after he was extubated, they called me and they said, we had to reintubate Robert. And I said, okay, I said, it's 12 o'clock in the morning. Do Dad and I need to leave right now? Is this something? And they were like, no. They were like, he's requiring very modest ventilator settings, nothing compared to what he has in the past. And they're like, we truly don't know what, we escalated the high flow oxygen as much as we could and it just wasn't enough. And they're like, we're trying to figure out what happened. And he had aspiration pneumonia from, And so he was intubated until Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving Day, they called and they said, we were able to successfully extubate him again. Let's see, you know. And they put a transpyloric tube down. They were like, let's stop feeding his stomach. Obviously, his stomach is not tolerating. And let's see how he does. Because surgery, his little lungs still looked so bad on x-ray. Surgery did not want to touch him for a G-tube and an SN. And the neonatologist was like, this is what this kid needs. He's going to keep silently aspirating until we, like, his lungs aren't going to look any better until I got a call. Well, I had gone back to work. And I got a call at work, and I only taught one class that day, and they knew that after I got done teaching that class, I was going to come over and sit with Robert. And the neonatologist said, I want to tell you first, in case you get here and I'm not here, and anesthesia comes and talks to you. Because she said, because he was a preemie, he had a massive PDA. And they had left it open because of the pulmonary hypertension, and it was now causing issues. And they were like, she was like, we're taking him in the morning to have his PDA clipped. She was like, there's no other. She was like, she said, his heart is extremely enlarged. And she's like, I believe that is why he is breathing so hard and so fast. and requiring so much high flow support. She was like, I truly, she's like this, she's like, the echo's bad. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it's not pulmonary hypertension. She goes, this is, and she said, it needs to be clipped. And so I was like, okay, well, all right, okay. Mm-hmm. So he had his PDA clipped, and then his lungs started to look, and they, pediatric surgery saw he did so well with that surgery and only required to being intubated for a day versus an extended, that they were like, oh, there he is. Sorry. I was like, oh, I hear him. 2 weeks later on the 16th, they did his G-tube and his Nissen. And after that, he was a completely different baby. I mean, his flow rate was able to come way down. They tried low flow. Mm-mm. He wasn't ready for that. He let them know quite quickly that was not going to work. And they started talking discharge. They started talking to pulmonology and were like, what can we send? Because he was then the oldest baby in the NICU.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had been there the longest. Everybody else, even his little cubby mate, who was born way before him at just a way younger gestational age, had gone home. And they were like, what can we do to get this kid? Because we're about to have to transfer him to PICU, mm-hmm. because he's just getting too big. And pulmonology was like, he can go home on a vent with the, we can either trach him, or he can go home on the non-invasive through a ram. And she was like, all right, let's get that equipment here and see how he does. He did so much better getting off the high flow and on the CPAP that it was just, they were like, we should have done this
sooner.
And he would have, you know, I want to say they tried it. They started it right before Christmas. We didn't get him home until the 20th of January. All because we had to battle insurance for one of his meds. And it was, people learned very quickly, you don't cross me when it comes to my son or anyone in my family. I'm not a nice, like, I'm nice until you don't, until I'm, unfortunately, 4 days after he came home, he got COVID. Mm-hmm. We think he actually had it when he came home, and it just took him 4 days, and us just being new parents and having him around all the time, to realize that something was wrong. I took him to the pediatrician, and I said, you know, he's requiring the max flow. I was like, he's on a PEEP of 9 and 5 liters. And I was like, he's still sitting really low. And I was like, our concentrator can't go up any higher. And our it's a family practice out here. We just now got him in with an actual pediatrician, thank the Lord. And she was, you know, being that she had no CDH experience, she's like, I'm gonna send you to the ER. She was like, she's like, he doesn't sound that bad, but she was like, I would rather err on the side of caution with all the respiratory stuff going around right now than to send y'all home and say, let's just see what he does. Yeah, COVID. And they were like, okay, we're going to send him. And they actually called NICU back, and NICU was like, we're not taking him with COVID. No, he's going upstairs to pick you. We barely got over there before he crashed and needed to be bagged because his saturation just, and his little body had just fought as long as it could. And he couldn't fight any longer. They placed him on BiPAP and got him. And the ICU doctor the next morning came in and she said, I'm trying to figure out how much of this is COVID related and how much of this is just Robert. Because she was like, even on very high BiPAP settings, she was like, he's still breathing really fast and just will randomly drop. And I'm like, him being tapnik-nik and him randomly dropping is him. I said, he does it at home. And I said, he'll do it when he eats. And I said, give him a couple of minutes. And I said, he pops her right back up. And she's like, I wonder how much of that excitement last night was just him. And not, and she goes, we just don't know him. Like, he stayed for 5 days and then we got him home. We've had 3 other hospital stays since the COVID. One being he was having apnea episodes and we have no idea why. They actually at that point did a cardiac cath and discovered that he does not have pulmonary hypertension anymore, that it's gone. And so I have been able to get off all pulmonary hypertension meds, which is a huge relief in my book, because I don't have to argue with insurance
right
every month to get that approved. And he's had most recently, and where CDHI came in with the prayer request, was the seizure-like activity. The throwing himself back and just violently shaking. And we've had 2 normal EEGs, and they say it's just reflux. That it's just, he's just so uncomfortable when he is too, even with the button.
Mm-hmm.
And GI is convinced he has an allergy even to what we're feeding him. But she's like, there's not any other really option until he's a year adjusted and can come off formula altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, so we've switched to one of the formulas that's actually technically recalled right now and just mix it with, because he's on half Pyramino and half Semilac Alimentum right now, which we're slowly starting to see an improvement in just his comfort. But gaining new milestones every day. We're off CPAP, except at night now. He's able to just come off and chill on low flow when he's awake.
That's nice.
And just,
he's a fighter.
He is extremely, and pulmonology told me the other day, he was like, if you had told me that day when he said I first met Robert that we would be here just short of eight months later, he said, I wouldn't have believed you. He said, I didn't expect this kid.
That's wonderful that he's done so well.
Yeah, he's definitely... And he's our one and only. I have been told I can't have any more, and that he's
a precious boy. Do you have to, are you doing early intervention with him? Do you have somebody coming in and doing?
Yes, we have PT three times a month. And then we just started with speech. He shows interest in taking things by mouth. It's just, we don't know how safe his swallow is. And so right now it's just teeny tiny little taste and teeny tiny little bites of like stage 1 baby food.
Mm-hmm.
The other day I was holding him and he was trying to steal my food and was very vocal that I was not giving him my food.
Oh.
And the other day, then the next day I was holding him when I was eating and he got to try pizza sauce.
Oh.
So, I mean, he's.
He's showing interest of wanting to eat early. That's very good.
He's showing more and more every day being. If we could, like my mother-in-law always says, if you took all the tape off his face and the cannula off, you wouldn't. Because now more and more he behaves like a normal baby. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing normal baby things now, and he just has the cannula.
That's very good.
And the button.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. He's done amazingly well with everything that he's encountered on his journey. I thank you so much for sharing his story and raising awareness. If there was anything you could tell a CDH family, what would that be?
Don't give up. These guys are way stronger than you think. They'll blow you if given the... Because I truly thought when they told us when I was pregnant that this was going to be a death sentence. That we wouldn't have... It's not.
No, it's not. There's so much hope out there for these CDH babies. And you gave Robert that hope and you were fighting for him. You were his mama bear and his advocate. And he's got a great set of parents.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Heather, for sharing your journey with us and what your Robert has gone through. And Tracy for doing another wonderful interview. If any CDH family would like to have your child featured on the radio show, the telethon, and our social media, please reach out to us at cpab@cdhi.org or go to www.cdhi.org/share your story. Once again, I'm Dawn Ireland representing CDH International. If we can do anything at all for you, we're right here. Help us to raise awareness, share this radio show, contribute your own story, and let's keep fighting for the babies. Until next week, bye-bye.
Stand up for the land, Jimmy.